Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive, we are positively no longer in Baltimore. But that's the whole goal of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, Don Moeller. We have come to, and I've never come south. I told you this, Mike. I've never come south looking for a better crab cake than what I've had in Baltimore. But I've had some great crab cakes on the Eastern Shore. I had a very good crab cake in Prince George's County. I keep calling it Peachy, with Don Edwards. Across the aisle, we have the good Lieutenant Governor and MSNBC contributor and maybe political candidate. Don, this is where... We haven't given him the crab cake.
It's time to break some news.
We've got him all hangry right now, right? We haven't fed him. We told him we're not feeding him until we
Well, we had the Lieutenant Governor on not long ago, and you were in that deliberative stage.
Yeah.
You were very honest. I appreciated, actually, how forthright you were that day, because you didn't give us the... Oh, you know, I'm just happy sitting in my basement being on MSNBC. He said, hey, I'm taking a look at this thing.
I love Maryland.
I love the state,
She's
and I'm taking a look at it, and it's now a few months later. Tick tock, tick tock. Where are we in the process?
So we've gone from deliberative to exploratory. Let's do that.
I saw that term the other day. I formed an exploratory committee.
Well, and
what? Come on now.
No, actually, what that does.
It's getting late early.
Right. This is what happens when you talk into another politician. This is exactly what happens.
I saw lots of Cox signs and different things on Easter. I saw signs. Well,
we're going to talk about Mr. Cox, but let's let the LG talk a little bit about what the exploratory thing looks like.
Yeah, well, basically, I've said from the very beginning that this was going to be done on my terms, my timetable. I'm not trying to meet anybody's expectations, but... mine and my family's, and trying to figure out whether or not, you know, Marylanders are ready for someone like me. I'm a little bit different than your average bear, for sure. But, you know, I wanted to take the time seriously to talk to some of the leadership, talk to, you know, moms and pops and, you know, teachers and union guys and gals out there to kind of get a feel for where the state is. Marylanders love our governor, Larry Hogan. They like him a lot, and
especially on the shore. I was over there all week.
Hogan has set a standard. I think there's a genuine nexus between Bob Ehrlich and Larry Hogan in terms of what each of those administrations attempted and accomplished. And so the question is, okay, what's the next iteration of that kind of leadership, particularly as styled by Larry Hogan, having gotten elected twice in the state, you know, recognizing the numbers, Don, which you know very well. Maryland is a Democratic state, at least on paper. I think, you know, there are appeals that can be made to people that go over the partisan, cross over the partisan lines. So folks genuinely look at a candidate and go, okay, yeah, I like what you're saying. I like where you want to go with
it. Well, you say you're a different kind of candidate. This is a different kind of state.
It's a different
kind
of state.
To be so blue, voting so red, and being so purple.
Yeah. And Maryland,
and gerrymandered to hell as we every time we sit and talk to a
And where you see a lot of that played out is at the state level, you know, with state senate legislative districts, where you see those lines drawn that way. Congressional. When I was state party chairman, our Maryland congressional delegation was 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans.
You know, people forget
that. And the Democrats have gerrymandered it down to 1, and that's Andy Harris on the, you know.
I want to talk about that, because I don't know that you and I, we may disagree a little bit on that, but I think we're probably closer than we think on that gerrymandered district, because, God, there's so many issues. We could talk for hours. The recent census, for example, surprised folks, at least when
it's already stirred the pot.
Right, it stirred the pot.
Create some real problems for Democrats.
I was down, as I said, I was out of town taking my granddaughter to college, and that's when the census hit. And I'm saying to my daughter and to my wife, I'm saying, whoa. I said, guys, this didn't play out the way people thought it was going to play out. It, on paper, appears that it's better for Democrats, potentially, than we anticipated. Certainly, the country is more diverse, I think. And
you mean the national census?
Yeah, the national census.
No, the national census, I don't think, plays out well for Democrats at all. I mean, I think Republicans have a very clear advantage in the sense that, you know, at least 18 states, they're going to be redrawing those lines where they pick up seats and Democrats lose seats.
But how about the move, Michael, from in a number of states, from rural parts of the state to the more urban parts of the state?
Yeah.
You take New York. I mean, I saw one estimate where New York, and again, it gets back to gerrymandering,
right?
Because
right.
it's controlled by Dems, that they may be actually able to draw a map that will net five or six seats for Dems in the state of New York because of the growth moving closer to Manhattan.
At the legislative level, not the congressional level. They lose a seat congressionally in New York.
They lose a seat.
Right.
But I'm talking about the way those seats are divvied up.
Yeah, but if you lose a seat, you can't make one up out of thin air. I mean, your congressional delegation is going to shrink by one seat. So the question, no matter how you draw the lines, you're still going to, because you're drawn by numbers.
But I might net Democratic seats now. I might have a larger Democratic advantage in my congressional delegation.
Well, that depends on how you finagle your lines. If you draw a pterodactyl kind of congressional district, as we've done in Maryland.
Well, how you draw your lines is always going to be gerrymandered because someone's controlling it with a lot of pressure on them.
Right, which is why politicians should not be involved in the process of drawing the lines for their congressional or any seat that they may hold.
Do you and I agree that it has to be a federal solution?
No.
Okay. See, that's where you're gonna get the yin and the yang.
No, because the Constitution.
My good friend, the lieutenant governor, would like Democrats to disarm.
No. How are you gonna disarm? You have the majority. You have the voter registration. You're not gonna disarm.
Because come on,
we saw what you did.
Don't kid her.
If we do it
by a commission in the state, right?
The lines would be drawn fairly.
But I'm going to allow Republican states to not do that.
No, I'm just saying, but that's the individual state.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we do it federally, then it's a level playing field, right?
No, it's not, because the Constitution doesn't allow for federal involvement in elections. They gave that power explicitly to the states. I mean, I'm sorry, that's the way the founders saw it. You know, those 13 colonies.
Next step, secession. With that approach, Governor, we're going to
continue to have gerrymandered.
No, we don't.
Districts
no, because
all
state,
over
no,
the United
we're not
states.
Because states. Gerrymandering is the art. Understand what we're talking about. Let's be clear about the language. Gerrymandering is the art of drawing the lines. That's what that is. All right, drawing the lines for the districts. Now, it has become sort of a pejorative in the modern era, but we've always been drawing the lines since the country was formed.
I agree with that.
So that's what the Constitution allows for. That's one. Two, who could control those lines is controlled by who runs the legislature, Democrats or Republicans, Federalists or whatever, right? Back in the day. So where you have Republicans controlling the state legislature, Senate and the House, with a Republican governor, they're going to draw the lines more favorably to them. Where you have, up until recent times in a state like Maryland, where you have lines being drawn by a Democratic legislature and a Senate and a governor, that's why I sued Paris Glendening in 2000 over the map he drew. Because the Democrats drew lines in the state. Tell me how you draw lines. Let me make my point. Tell me how you draw lines using Prince George's County as an example that has 8 Senate seats, right? 5 of them are filled by white senators in a county that of 800,000 citizens, 75% of whom are black. How does that happen? Well, you draw the lines. So and I learned this lesson a long time ago. You draw the lines black enough to win your primary and white enough to win your general. And that's what happens.
Okay, so you and I agree that that's egregious. Where I think we differ,
mm-hmm.
and I'm surprised that we differ, is that you go back the 30 years or so,
right,
when Maryland's delegation was 4-4.
Right.
Okay, I think that's more reflective
of the state,
of the electorate in the state,
right,
than it is now.
And the Democrats gerrymandered it, so it's now 7-1.
Wait a minute now, I'll let you finish. So I agree that 4-4 was more representative of the politics of the state. I don't think that Maryland's Democratic governors or Democratic legislators should be able to gerrymander districts that create a 7-to-1 breakdown. But here's where I differ.
Right.
And if we're going to do it by an independent commission in Maryland,
yeah,
which I think we should be doing everywhere, you can't just do it in Maryland and
why
then
not
allow red states to continue to allow red governors to gerrymander
red
their states.
But it's not the same thing is happening in blue states. What are you talking about?
But it should. But the reason you like the current system is that Republicans are in control of more state houses.
I don't like the current system.
But yet you don't.
Nobody.
He talks independent commission, and I laugh at him. I'm like, I don't know that we could have such a thing.
We do. We can. It works in other states. There are other states that
have independent commissions. Really independent, though.
Yes.
We can pass a federal law. It's called H.R. 1.
If
Larry Hogan's appointed, I promise you, it is not independent. And if a Democrat gets a hold of the state, it'll be the same thing.
Well, you can make it independent. I agree with the governor.
Look, fellas. There are independent commissions that are set up in states on the western seaboard of this country that work just fine. You have a unicameral legislature. I think it's in Montana or someplace. So I mean, this is not. We act like, oh my God, this is some strange thing. It isn't. I mean, it is. It does happen elsewhere. To your point, Don, it does. You know, red state governors and legislatures are doing the exact same things that blue state governors and legislatures
are doing. And neither should be doing it.
But they're empowered to do it under the Constitution. They can make that decision, that choice. The question is, should the citizens now, through ballot initiative or other forms, say, look, to dial down the partisan heat on elections, let's set up an independent commission that the legislature, the governor, and the courts get to appoint players. You know, there are any number of combinations in which these individuals can be put in place. Take currently elected officials out of the mix, right? They have no say in the process. And look at the state. You know what the constitutional mandate is based on the census. Right now, it's 750,000 people comprising a district. Right?
Giving us 435 members.
And you draw the lines accordingly. What's going to happen here in Maryland? Guess what's going to happen under the new maps? You're now going to see you're going to see a shift around the Beltway, where some of Montgomery County, because Montgomery County has grown as much as it has, is going to now, that district is going to, part of that is going to make up part of Prince George's County Congressional District. And that shift is going to continue on around.
Well, you're going to see a couple of things, right, Governor? You're going to see
What happens in the first congressional district?
What do you think that first congressional district's likely to look like?
I chatted with Heather Mazur about that last week.
Exactly.
It ain't going to be this first district.
It's not going to be, and that's because of how the populations have shifted. So what you need is people who will draw the maps based on how the populations have moved. I've always argued for, and I sued Governor Glendening on this point in 2001, that single-member districts, legislative districts, are the best representation. One person, one vote, right? This crazy nonsense we have in the state where you have three delegates and a senator, and I get to vote for three delegates. No, dude, you get to vote for one. One-on-one. Because what do they do? What have the Democrats done? They've basically, you know, hide behind, you know, the weakest candidate hides behind the other two. Or the strongest candidate is pulling the other two.
Is that your major? Because I go back. That's an issue that I don't have strong feelings about one way or the other. I'm always intrigued by the single member district discussion.
Well, it's how you wind up with, you know, five white guys representing a majority of black people. Because the votes are diluted when you're voting for three people in that one district. So now that vote is split up. And so what happens is,
it takes very few votes.
It takes very few folks to get your people through. And given the way our politics works in states like Maryland and elsewhere around the country, I'm going to hold that power closest to the people who can help retain that power.
Well, let's build on that and talk about.
So my thing on voting, just as a quick bottom line, open up the process. Make it fair, make it transparent, give everyone access to the ballot box, give everybody one vote. So if I'm going to vote for a delegate to represent me, I got one vote to do that, not three. I'm going to vote for a senator to represent me, I got one vote, just like I do for governor or any other office. and draw the lines fairly that best represent the people. I mean, when you look at a county like Prince George's County, arguably it could be its own congressional district, right? But we know, given where there's excess population to its west, and maybe less population to its south or to its east, you're gonna shift your lines accordingly to accommodate to take off the excess or to build up the smaller number. I got that, but do so in a way that you don't wind up with the third congressional district that looks like someone basically crapped.
It's one of the worst.
Crapped out.
One of
district.
The worst in the nation.
Right.
It's one of the worst in the nation.
Right.
There's no doubt. As I said, I don't think. I mean, we don't agree, but we're not. I don't think we're far apart.
We just disagree on the role of the federal government.
Exactly.
That's
Democrat Republican.
Right.
I think
the Constitution has made it very clear. This is the purview of the states. The states, just as they decide, how to vote for a president, you know what's required for the Electoral College votes there, also decide how to prosecute their elections.
And again, we're with Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, MSNBC superstar, coming to you from his home office.
Jerry Seafood, baby.
From his home
ground
office.
Zero.
Well, let's talk about the Steele race, because Nestor is fascinated, I think, as many people are, and certainly this is part of what you're looking at. There are a couple of things that I think those of us who love the politics of thing and the game part of it are always fascinating. The purple part of the state in gubernatorial elections versus the reliably blue state in federal elections. It's a pretty darn reliable blue state, presidential and Senate.
Yeah.
And as purple as you can be gubernatorially. What is that disconnect?
It's how people look at, federal office versus state office. You have some states that, will send a Republican to Washington, U.S. Senate, for example. But they'll always vote Democrat for the governor. So they want someone to go who can bring the money back home, but then they want someone who can manage the money once it gets there. And that narrative
switch. You think they're sophisticated enough to...
People undersell voters all the time. Trust me, all the years that I've danced with voters...
Well, that's an interesting analysis you just made.
Very sophisticated. And the same is true in other... you look at, a state like Massachusetts, where they'll elect a Republican governor, but they will give control of the legislature to
Democrats. It's very similar to Maryland
right.
in that sense.
Right. And so I think Maryland may be, potentially, we'll see how the upcoming election tracks out, may be in that space where it gives the Republicans, reasonable, sane Republicans, the powers to manage the state, and they give the legislature, the Democrats, the legislature, the power to check that.
Well,
we'll see. I don't know.
Well, Mike, you just touched on it, because I love that term he used, Nestor.
Reasonable, sane.
I wrote that down.
I was going to.
Some of my folks are out there on a limb. I've been calling it out.
I've been on boats the last couple of days where F. Biden is prominent.
Yeah.
Trump's still the president and almost was on August 13th, allegedly.
Right, Trump is not the president, so. Okay,
so, I mean, every day you sort of preach your gospel to this MSNBC audience. You talk about purple. You're a guy I would vote for governor if I heard your message.
That.
I mean, I voted for you once, right? And I've been very vocal about how I feel about Bob, in the aftermath of what he has supported and what other people who I love as Republicans, love as people, love as business owners, that where they could see anything like you and Donald Trump in common, I find that to be, that it says R next to it, but I don't know what that represents anymore. What is R going to bring to me to vote for ever again, having witnessed this the last 5 years for me?
That's going to be part of the case that, any Republican nominee in this state is going to have to make one way or the other. And I've always been anchored very squarely in my belief system. I grew up outside the Republican Party. I grew up in Washington, D.C., I'm a native Washingtonian, outnumbered 10 to 1 growing up.
I was going to say, there weren't a whole lot of Republicans
right,
in Washington.
Grew up in a Democratic household, and yet found my political voice inside the party. There's history for that in terms of the historic relationship between GOP and the black community, which is long since been abandoned by Republicans. Some of us have tried to, in various times, to reinstitutionalize that and to reinvigorate it. But I've always been very clear about where I stand and how I look at public service. I've been a party official, but I've been an elected official too. So governing is a very different style and a very different role for than being a candidate or being a party guy. And what's gotten lost is that opportunity to then once you go through the political process of running and engaging and making the case for your ideas, to shut that off and then govern. And I think, one of the disappointments that I've seen is. And I try to remind my Democratic friends this, when you look at someone like a Liz Cheney didn't stop being a Republican. She has not stopped being a conservative.
But I think she's going to stop being a congressional representative because of her decision.
That may be, but that's a consequence she was willing, a price she was willing to pay for standing on principle. That the country mattered more than her party, and the country matters more than one individual in the party. And a number of us have taken that position. So I think at this time, one of the leading indicators of leadership has to be, how do you see this model between the country versus the party? It's true for Democrats too. You see it playing out among progressives on the left. What's happening right now that Joe Biden's got to deal with, his progressive wing saying, even though we've got a bipartisan compromise on an infrastructure bill with 19 Republicans voting in the Senate to support Biden's agenda, that love ain't being displayed in the House among progressives.
But it will be. But here's where I think there's a difference.
You say it will be. Well, you should have a conversation with AOC.
It will be. No. See, here's where I know Republicans like to demonize AOC.
I'm not demonizing. I'm just taking her at her word.
I know. But here's what I'm suggesting.
I'm taking Nancy Pelosi at her word.
Here's where I'm suggesting that I have no doubt that at that come to Jesus moment, that bill's going to pass.
We're at the moment, and
it's going to pass.
Okay,
it's going to pass.
I'll be
glad to eat crow if it doesn't. It's going to pass. I mean, there's no more moderate Democrat than Dutch Ruppersberger, and you don't see Dutch out there. You know, there are more Dutch.
Dutch Ruppersberger isn't the problem.
I understand, but moderates. what I'm saying is, the moderates are going to hold their are going to be able to suck it up on this. AOC. And those progressives are going to say, look, this is better. It's not everything we want. Whereas,
well, they can say that now, but they're not saying. So to your point, why put the country through that bull, right? Through that wrenching bull, that political unnecessity. This non-necessity, right? Why go through all that? The country right now, what do we want? We're sitting in a restaurant, which I can tell you pre-COVID at this hour would be packed.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
and we got this. It's a Ravens mask.
Right. I like that.
Yeah,
I like
we masked
that.
Up when we came in.
All right. I appreciate that.
Right.
And so what do we want? We want to come back. We want to come back to use the president's term. We want to build back better. Right. We want to be stronger. We want to go back to, reinvigorating our economy and our communities, et cetera. Right. And so, this jobs bill, this infrastructure bill, is on the road to doing that. So why play games with it?
Well,
you got the votes.
Because
if you want to fight on the other stuff, then make that a separate fight. But when you can put people back to work now.
But here's the difference: they at least the Democratic Party is going to have consensus on that. They're going to, whether it means, and the reason I mentioned Dutch, there were a group of moderates that spoke out and said, hey, don't forget about us.
Right.
So the Democrats have this, it's that old Will Rogers line, right? I'm not a member of an organized party, I'm a Democrat.
Right.
I mean, they've got this big tent. The question, it seems to me, that you have to answer, and I guess what I'm asking you to sort of share with us as you go around the state, is you've got, I think, to decide whether the Republican Party is a big enough tent anymore to have a guy like Michael.
Well,
because, am I right, Michael?
Can I put it this way? I haven't left.
No.
I'm still a Republican.
I know you haven't left.
And if I run, I'm going to run as a Republican.
Right. All right. So there. But what you're trying to make sense of is whether a guy with your principled set of conservative values
right.
that really haven't changed much over the
right.
years, you
right.
would say have been consistent, can win in
yeah.
while a Dan Cox runs around the state playing every Trump card that he can. Let me just go ahead.
Put this on the table. That's Dan's choice. God bless you. Do what you're going to do, boo. Just do you, all right?
I didn't see that many signs,
right,
by the way.
Right.
It's all few.
I'm gonna do me when I do me.
Right.
And the people in this state have known me. They have voted for me as part of a ticket. They, you know, even though I lost, got a nice number of votes for the U.S. Senate in 2006.
Right.
I've had a conversation, not just nationally, but with the people of Maryland over the last 10 years or so since I've been doing podcasts and TV and all of that. So people know me. I have not held back. You can Google Michael Steele. Trust me, you will get a boatload of stuff, right? So if you want to know where I am and what I think, I've never shied away from that.
I don't think that's the question,
but
though,
no,
Michael.
This is my point. When I do, whenever I do it, voters will then have the opportunity to assess if that's the kind of leader they want.
That's what I'm trying to get to, though,
right,
and I'm trying to dig down. And I'm not.
I mean, there's no digging. That's it.
Well, there's digging in this sense. I guess it's the tactician part of me. How does one
make the case?
I know that if you decide to get in,
right.
What I'm trying to come to grips with is how do you. How are you able to analyze is it just simple traditional polling to
no,
say or how are you trying to analyze whether there's a lane for Michael Steele? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Oh, it's heart, his head, it's practical. I mean, it's a lot of different things. It's what people tell me, it's what leaders tell me, it's what I see, what I hear. It's polling. It's all of these things. Look, everyone thinks that there's some science to deciding to run for office. For some folks, it isn't. For some folks, it is. For me, having been in this space and been all up and down the quarters in this regard, it's a gut check. It's how you see the future unfolding to the extent that you can sort of look at that and see whether or not there's a path there, whether or not you're willing to make that case. Day in and day out, engage in certain battles that you'll have to engage in.
Be ready to win and ready to lose, though, too.
That's
as
it.
A human
that's,
being.
There you go. That's
I mean,
it.
He and I engaged
right.
about running
that's,
for mayor last year.
That's
and he's because you've been at this so long, both of you. You're all about polls and this and that. At some point, you dive in and say, maybe I should. Donald Trump shouldn't have won.
Right.
And he won.
Right.
And the greatest,
right.
no one ever thought he could win. That day.
Right.
He
no,
didn't think he
which
could
is,
win.
No, which is why, which is why every candidate out there, right. whether they're in a Democratic primary, the 9 folks who are currently running, there may be more. On the Republican side, the 2 that are or 3 that are currently running, 2 that are running for governor and the 1 for comptroller, you know, there may be more. They all have to make their case. At the end of the day, you make your case. Every race I've ever been in, I've said it very, made it very clear straight up front. I don't run against anybody. I run for
right.
something. And so my thing, I don't want to engage people in whatever they're trying to do. I'm not going to get caught up in their stuff. I have to make the case, and the people assess and evaluate whether or not that's the kind of leadership they want. They like the idea on infrastructure for the state or roads and bridges and schools and all of those.
Well, this
all
is where
those,
you make your lane.
Which is
once
where
you
thank you. It's where you make your lane, and that's really what it is.
Well,
it's my internal review of myself. My values, my you know, issues and policies that I'd like to see us kind of work towards and improve on, and whether or not I can create that lane in this environment. And it's not just getting through a Republican primary. It's also going through a general election in which I've got a Democratic president sitting in the White House. I've got, Democrats, outnumbering in terms of just raw numbers, Republicans and independents in the state, although independent voters are a lot closer to Democrats than Republicans. So, there are a lot of, to your point, a lot of the metrics in the process that you go through.
When do you have to decide? When do you say it's on your timetable?
When is the filing deadline?
Yeah.
end of February. So.
Yeah. I mean, is that what you're thinking in terms? Well, I mean, I know you're saying.
I'll have
a decision sometime in the fall. It'll be sometime September, early October.
Why are you in this place where you want to do this?
Because that's where I want to be.
You think you're going to run. You're putting things together.
Yeah.
You're putting the next year of your life aside to do this.
And all that could change.
What right this minute makes you think you can win, that you're considering it? What's going to make a Trump voter vote for you in the primary?
I don't know if a Trump voter will vote for me in the primary. I've got to make the case to a Trump voter. I mean, because if it's just about Trump, I'm very clear about Trump. But if, a Trump voter who thinks, oh, you're not a conservative, I'm like, well, okay, last time I checked all the right boxes, you know. But we've seen this narrative play out. It's about the cult of personality. I give you Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. I give you Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Those folks have not backed off of their conservative principles and ideas.
I'm assuming that Donald would want to play in this race. Should the former lieutenant governor want to be governor?
It wouldn't be the wisest thing that he could do, but
Wouldn't you anticipate? I mean, he's a pretty bitter guy, right?
This is why he's amassed all this money,
right?
Being the lout that he is in the aftermath, is to not only fight guys with D's in front of them, but this feels...
No, he's amassed this money to pay for his legal bills. The reports are already out that none of this money is being spent on candidates around the country. He's not putting money into candidates.
There's that little disclaimer, right, that he can spend it however he wants.
He's not spending this money on candidates. He's not backing it.
Right.
He gives you a verbal support and an endorsement, but he's not putting $100,000, $2 million, $20 million.
He's not buying TV ads to beat you in a
primary. I know we're getting close to crab cake time, and we want
to do that.
I know we need to do that. Before I do that, I want to shift gears a little bit, because I think you're one of the best people to talk about this issue, and I always think about we don't talk about it as much anymore, given the vitriol. We talk about other things,
right?
But you've made no bone about the fact that you're a traditional Catholic. You were a seminarian. People know where you are on right to life,
right?
In a state like Maryland, that's always. It remains an important issue, particularly for women. I would ask the same question of President Biden, for example, who might have a different answer. But how does a Republican and a traditional Catholic work those personal feelings into being a governor?
We're a Catholic state, but this issue is settled. Didn't we have a constitutional amendment in 1992 on abortion? So I don't understand your question.
So you're saying it's settled law in the state of Maryland.
It's been settled since 1990, since voters.
No, I understand
since voters voted.
But you expect to be asked that? I mean, I would expect gubernatorial candidates to be asked that.
But why? I mean, there's no issue before the state legislature. There's no issue before the court. I mean, you can ask the question. My only point is.
Well, it may be more relevant if the court overturns Roe v. Wade.
If the court's not going to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Just
like the court isn't going to overturn health care.
Okay.
These are conservative justices who believe in stare decisis. It's 43 years of settled law that they have upheld in various forms.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, as an elected official, you have to follow what the law and the Constitution says is the law and the Constitution. And the people of Maryland settled that question for us. 30 years
ago. It's this fascinating argument we have about these fringy kind of things about I was with someone last week who was talking like the first thing. He was a Republican, not a high information person. But, when we got to talking about things, the first thing was important. You're coming to take my guns. And I'm like, man, I hadn't even thought about that. That's not even where my head is.
I think you said, I'm not trying to keep you from shooting ducks.
That's exactly what I said. I said, I've been over here watching ducks. I don't think anyone wants to take your duck shooting away.
I just don't want you with an AK-47.
I think we want to make sure you've been beating your wife and you've got an AK-47 and you've amassed 5,000 rounds of magazines.
We've got some of the strongest gun laws in the country in our state, and yet we still see issues that arise from that. So, maybe we need to have a different perspective on how we address some of the issues, particularly as they relate to, the illegal use of firearms, access to those illegal firearms, and the various processes there. But you're absolutely right. I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, always have been. I don't personally own a gun, but I have a license to own one, but I don't own one. It just for me is, again, there are a lot more people who are responsible in this space than irresponsible, number one. And number two, I think it's, like a lot of those issues, it's not really fringe. I mean, it's constitutional and people take it very seriously.
But if the first thing you say in a political debate is, you're coming to take my guns, we're really far away from that. If that's the first thing on your mind.
But that is born out of various narratives that have been allowed to infest in this space instead of, people who know better being responsible in the discussion and people who, want to stoke those fears amongst certain constituencies because it generates cash for them and it generates more sales for weapons, et cetera. The Constitution is very clear and there's been no attempt made that I know of to repeal the Second Amendment. And every state in the union has, through its legislature, ways of making sure that those constitutional rights are protected. To your point, no one's coming to stop you from duck hunting and things like that. But we, as a community, still need to be concerned about the violence that is perpetrated with guns. And a lot of those guns, particularly landing in communities of color, landing in poor communities, including poor white communities, that then have access to those weapons illegally. Those are things that we can be a little bit more prospective about, I think, than we have been.
All right.
I think it's crab cake time.
Let's take a break. Don Moeller is here, former Baltimore County executive, along with Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele and sometimes MSNBC contributor, and sometimes, maybe down the road, candidate again. We are talking about that. All right, we're going to eat the crab cake. We've done 30 crab cakes in 30 days for our 30th anniversary. Today is day 15. Never PG County, only Prince George's County.
And the bomb today.
The crab bomb is on its way. I'm Nestor. We're back for more in Prince George's County on Baltimore Positive right after this.